Hi, everyone. Welcome to the All Out Coach Show. I'm Tim Mikelashvili. I'm your host, and this is your podcast in which we get to share the experiences of many leaders, those who question the conventional ways of doing business. Today, I'm particularly excited because I have an entrepreneur who's been able to merge the technology of today and of tomorrow with the culture and with organizations that have been able to grow exponentially. He is going to educate us on how he's been able to make those transformations a reality. So my guest today is Nathan Hirsch. Nathan, very nice to have you here.
Yeah, great to be here. Appreciate it. And always love just talking about business and hiring and culture. So it should be a lot of fun.
Tell us about your transformation, because you started being an entrepreneur very early on. So what was that journey like?
Yeah, I mean, I started off as a broke college kid looking for extra side money. And I ended up buying and selling textbooks to make some money on the side. And that led me down a path of buying people's books and selling them to online distributors, which led me to Amazon. And I thought it was really cool that I could sell all these different products on Amazon. This was 2008, 2009. Amazon was bursting onto the scenes. And so I started experimenting, came across drop shipping baby products, building relationships with different manufacturers, and really scaled this business out of my college dorm room, which led me to hiring my friends because I needed people to work to help me grow this business, realizing that college kids were not very reliable, which led me down the path to hiring virtual assistants. And hired my first VA. Her name was Chicky Ann. She is incredible. But I made some bad hires after that. And I kind of set out on a mission to create this perfect hiring process because I saw it as a way to be able to scale my businesses without having to rely on people in the US that at that time I didn't think were very reliable because I was hiring college kids. So from there, I ended up creating I ended up selling a lot on Amazon using these virtual assistants. I ended up creating another company called FreeUp, which was a marketplace for freelancers and virtual assistants. And the cool thing about FreeUp is we built the entire business with no office, no US employees. We eventually did over eight figures once we were 4 years in. And the entire team was run by these virtual assistants. So we ended up getting acquired in 2019, and we can dive into any parts of these that you want. And now I run a company called Outsource School, where I teach people how to use our hiring systems and processes to scale their own remote teams.
Yeah, I heard your review on MentorBox for the first time, and I was just really inspired, inspired by all the different steps that you've been able to capture and that you now offer many others who are starting their own businesses. So are there particular stages or steps that you'd like to highlight as you were able to scale these businesses, like FreeUp, for example?
Yeah, I mean, they all were a little different, right? I mean, we took stuff that we learned and brought it to the next business. So, I mean, with Amazon, we became really good at hiring. We did a lot of trial and error. We worked on systems, we worked on processes, and that took a while. That took years. But once we figured it out, once we started our second business, we knew how to hire really well, which gave us a huge advantage. We were able to scale up a team very quickly. But we didn't know how to market because with Amazon, you pay Amazon 15%. They do all the marketing for you. They bring you all the customers. So with FreeUp, we spent the first few years learning how to market, learning SEO and Facebook ads and all these different things. And now with Outsource School, we hopefully know how to market and we know how to hire. So we kind of go off that and build on it. But there's other things that we didn't know. So that's kind of my big thing from entrepreneurial journeys, because it sounds great when you kind of say it in 2 minutes, but there's a lot of different ups and downs throughout the process. And you have to be able to take what you learn from one situation and quickly to apply it to the next.
Yeah. One of the lessons that sticks out from what you've taught was that you should not really start to hire other people and expand until you really have a system in place or something that is working. Would you say that's been true for most of your businesses, Nathan?
Yes and no. I do agree with that philosophy, with the exception that I'll hire like a few part-time people just to free up my time when I start a new company. So
Yep.
I've started three companies with $5,000 each. So not a lot of money to hire people, but I've hired two virtual assistants, a 5-hour a week VA to just do my inbox and my calendar management. So I spend less time there, and a VA to do my bookkeeping, which at first isn't very much, but I can't do, if I spend time on the books, then I won't be able to spend time growing the company, but I also need accurate numbers to know how the company's doing. So I get those off my plate first. We're talking $5 an hour, 10 hours a week, something like that. So $50 a week. But outside of that, anything else I wouldn't hire for until I have actual systems or processes for it.
Okay. Virtual assistants and really the potential that they offer in business really was something that I didn't know much about. I had heard about it, you know, before you really made it very vivid and you made me understand the value that virtual assistants offer any business, regardless of the field. And also the relationship that you develop with these virtual assistants who are real people, they're human beings. How they've helped you and with what kinds of tasks, what's the range of activities or roles we can consider them for when we're running a business?
Yeah. So there's three different levels of people you can hire. You've got followers, you've got doers, and you've got experts. So followers, they're there to follow your system, your process. And that's what I consider a virtual assistant. Someone Yep. that might have 5 years of customer service experience, but the way that you do customer service might be different than the way that I do. So you still Yep. have to train them how you want it done. Then you got the doers who are more the specialists, the freelancers. They're graphic designers, writers, bookkeepers. You're not teaching a graphic designer how to be a graphic designer, but they're not consulting with you either. They're there to do something at a high level that they do 8-10 hours a day. And then you got the experts, the high-level consultants, agencies, whatever you want to call them. They come in with their own system, their own processes, their own strategy. So that's important from a pricing standpoint, because the VAs are 5 to 10, the followers, the doers are in that 30 to 50 range per hour, could be fixed prices. And the experts could be $100 an hour. They could be $10,000 an hour. Right. But that's kind of the way that I like to look at it. And in terms of roles, you can hire VAs for everything as long as you have a system for it. I mean, we hire VAs for sales calls. Anyone that goes to outsourceschool.com can set up a call with my VA team, who's awesome. They're remote. They're located in the Philippines. They speak perfect English. They know Outsource School, that they love Outsource School. And so all the way to lead generation, customer service, bookkeeping, there's very little that you can hire, that you can't hire VAs for, but you need those systems and processes in order to do it.
What are some of the advantages, Nathan, of hiring virtual assistants from other areas of the world, like for the Philippines?
Yeah, so here's what you don't want to do. You don't want to go around and hire like two people from the Philippines, two people from South Africa, two people from India, just because there's a lot of different cultural differences, right? There's communication. And if you're hiring VAs for the first time, that's going to be very overwhelming and you're adding a lot of work to your plate. So, I mean, you want to start off with one place until you master hiring VAs. And then, of course, there's great VAs all over the world. And then you get access to lots of different talent. But if you're going to start with one place, like I'm recommending, start with the Philippines. In my opinion, they learn English in school. That's a fact, not my opinion. My opinion is that it's a good first place to start, at least. They learn English in school. They're used to working U.S. hours. Their BPO, which is a lot of telecommunications, is a big job there. So they're used to working with U.S. and U.K. clients. They consume a lot of the same media. And we have videos on this at Outsource School where we go into what to know about hiring a virtual assistant in the Philippines. But the Philippines is a great place to start. And you don't want to just start hiring people from all over the world when you don't know what you're doing.
On my podcast, I've interviewed Brianna Carney, who's also an entrepreneur who has a world-class remote team where she has hired everyone from the Philippines, in fact. My follow-up question is, are there particular industries in which virtual assistants work better than in others? I work in the pharmaceutical industry, as you know. So we outsource a lot, the medical information that we communicate through our different departments. But it's nevertheless a regulated industry in which, for us, data governance and privacy issues are of you know, great concern.
Yeah. So my fiance is actually in the pharmaceutical industry as well.
Oh.
But I don't have experience personally in any industry besides business, e-commerce, marketing.
Okay.
But with that said, I mean, with FreeUp, we were a marketplace for VAs and freelancers. We had lots of clients that were in the pharmaceutical space or were in the restaurant industry or whatever it is. And a lot of the same stuff applies. I mean, you're dealing with data, you're dealing with emails, you're dealing with potential marketing efforts or whatever it is. Like any type of business has a lot of the same core functions. So I'm not sure if I can speak on like what particularly pharmaceuticals or people in the pharmaceutical industry should use virtual assistants for, but it can be used in any industry.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm seeing a lot of advances among my colleagues. There are a lot of progressive companies in the pharmaceutical industry who are hiring third parties and agencies to host very novel virtual scientific conferences. In fact, I'm speaking on that. I have a webinar on that in a couple of weeks. So insights, how we're reporting insights or the information from physicians in the medical department that is then relayed to other parts of the business, commercial marketing. And so I'm noticing some companies that are really evolving now that are using chat boxes, chat bots, that are able to scale a lot of that customer service using natural language processing. I've actually advised a company that uses natural language processing as well. I believe that a lot of the tips that you share on Outsource School, I think you have another site called for SOPs, developing SOPs as well. I think they're universal that they can be used in my industry as well. So in terms of the hiring practice and data governance, can you address how it is that somebody that's not experienced as you are, for example, that wants to hire a virtual assistant, but they don't know, you know, how to let go of the control, let's say, right, of their business. What are some tips you have in terms of like from the privacy and data governance issues?
My whole thing teaching someone for the first time is we want to teach you how to interview them. We want to teach you how to set expectations and onboard them. We want to teach you how to quickly train them and create processes that can be used over and over. And then we want to teach you how to manage them and keep them around. And that's really what everything comes down to. And then from there, it just becomes hiring for different roles, because hiring someone for sales is different than hiring someone for data entry work. So there's certain adjustments that need to be made. But the core fundamentals is you need to learn how to interview them, set expectations, onboard them, train them, and manage them.
And those were the skills and some very innovative practices that you've shared that I really want to talk about here, because I introduced you as an independent thinker who challenges the conventional ways of doing business. And I think interviewing and hiring is so instrumental in conventional companies as well as in virtual companies such as the ones you've built. So I would love for you to get into some of those details and those pearls, those specific tips of how you've been able to hire people that you've managed and they've stayed around with you from one business to the next.
Yeah. So we have a lot of acronyms at Outsource School that we like. For the interview process, we call it our CARE interview process, which is communication, attitude, red flags, and experience. So, I mean, we're looking for people that communicate at a high level, people that have the right attitude to work at our company, people that obviously have the right experience. And we look for red flags, that things that would cause alarm, that might cause issues down the line.
Yep.
For onboarding, we call it our SICK method, S-I-C-C. And this is all about setting expectations so you don't run into surprises down the line. So once you interview someone and they pass the CARE, then you go over schedule, you go over issues, you go over communication, and you go over culture, really setting the expectations of what it's like to work with you and your business and what you like and what you don't like. And from there, you actually give the VA a chance to back out if it's not a good fit. And then, I mean, training and managing, there's different things that go into it, like creating SOPs, running meetings, setting up communication channels, getting them to buy into the company, and doing all these things properly is what helps keep people around, but also just helps you hire great virtual assistants that you're on the same page with from day one.
Giving them a chance to back out is one lesson there. It's a model that many of us can, I think, adapt in any industry. Where we need to really train our employees. There are data, there are statistics that are striking in terms of how little training is done among even top Fortune 500 companies. How about the relevance of the role and how you test in terms of the questions that you ask? Do you ask somebody to present to you in person or do a video presentation if they're not going to use those skills, for example?
A unique part of our interview process is we use Slack for most people. Okay. The only exception being if their role is video or their role is audio, then we'll do Zoom calls or Skype calls or whatever it is. And same thing with running meetings, same thing with training. We do all of our meetings via Slack. And it doesn't have to be Slack. That's just a tool that I like. Yeah. It can be Skype, it can be Google Hangout. The point is using a text tool because for a lot of different reasons. There's a lot of great virtual assistants out there that aren't comfortable on video. And we would have missed out on some of our best hires if we forced them to do video calls. On top of that, their role really has nothing to do with video calls. So it's not really a good judge of how they are. You want to see how they write, how quickly they respond, things that probably matter a lot more. And then third, you want to keep everything in writing and easily get on the same page with people. And that's especially true during meetings. If you've got lots of different people and their internet's cutting in and out and people say something and it gets missed, you want to have everything in writing there so that everyone can read it. If they miss a meeting, they can go back and see it. And you can hold people accountable to it later on. If someone says something and dubs something else, you can pull it back and say, hey, here's where we talked about that. Like, let's get back on the same page.
So you've had a team that you've built to about 35 or more. You've been able to maintain a strong culture. So I'd like to ask you to talk about how you were successful in prioritizing culture in a growing remote business.
Culture is one of those things I like to divide into three parts. So the first is you need to know what your culture is and you need to define it because my culture is going to be different than another company. And you need to spend time talking to your business partner or figuring out for yourself on what are the actual key attributes that you want. Second, you want to make sure you only hire people that have those attributes and that are a fit for your culture because it's almost impossible to change someone who's not a culture fit to becoming a culture fit. You want to find someone who already is matching whatever your culture is. And last, you need to maintain the culture, which can be difficult for a lot of people that operate remote teams. And we do stuff like we do culture meetings. We had one this morning. We do different things at the beginning of meetings, like on our Monday morning meeting, everyone shares a picture of their weekend. And we also, during that meeting, we'll make sure that we incorporate parts of our culture when we go through stuff and explaining why we're doing things. So that's kind of three parts that people have to figure out. And we teach a lot of it at Outsource School, but figuring out what is your culture, finding people that fit that culture, and then also making sure that you maintain that culture and you're not just saying this is what our culture is without enforcing it over time.
And would you say that your focus on company culture played an important role in the sales and the growth of your business as well?
Yeah. And I mean, even selling the business. I mean, we when we went through the sale, we made sure that everyone at the company was taken care of. They kept their jobs or bonuses and all of that. And we took $500,000 from the sale and gave it to our team because they were such an integral part of the team. So you develop relationships with people when you have the right culture. When you have a business where you have some people are culture fits and some people are not, you never get to that point where you can have those kind of relationships.
Great. And you mentioned that you've ran a number of businesses. And so I want to ask you, how have you been able to balance the time efficiency, the agility that you have, the way you've run the business with the passion that you have for a particular field? And what are some advice for people who are just, let's say, passionate about one particular field? They start a business, it doesn't really work. They spend too much time. They never really develop a system, but they do not kind of branch out. How do you balance? How have you been able to do that? And what are tips that you have for those who are new entrepreneurs?
Great question. I mean, for me, it always comes down to doing the most important thing first thing in the morning. Whatever the most important thing is, that's what I do right when I wake up. So no matter how productive or not productive I am the rest of the day, the most important things is done. And that, to me, that builds momentum in your business where you're always focusing on the important thing and not procrastinating. As for passion, I mean, I sold baby products on Amazon for 7 years. So I wasn't exactly passionate about that, but I think I learned a valuable lesson that any business that I'm part of going forward, and we do invest minority investing into different companies as well, that we have to be excited for them and enjoy doing it. And I think my last thing is I kind of set up an ideal day for myself every day. I do one podcast a day in the middle of the afternoon. In the morning, I do the most important thing. I work out in between. I do my phone calls in the afternoon when it's nice outside. I don't have to be in my office and I can walk around. And that's just my ideal day. But I used to sometimes have podcasts in the morning or take calls at 8 p.m. Like, you figure out what your ideal day is and make sure your business is operating that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think it's amazing the amount of discipline or the extent of the discipline that you have and the routine, because I think that developing a strong routine is something that I coach a lot. I coach organizations and teams and individuals as well, because at All Out Coach, I have a multicultural global approach with a sports and a science mindset that's deeply rooted in visualization of the future. And so I think routine can help you manage your stress, manage your time, manage the platforms as well that you've created. So you've essentially created a turnkey kind of platforms and processes that I really recommend for many of those who are going to listen to consider and to use, to apply. So outsourceschool.com. And then the second one was with the SOPs is called SYSOP.com, correct?
Simply SOP.com. Oh, sorry. So it's a tool that we created to create and share processes with our remote teams. We actually include it in Outsource School. You can get it separate as well, but yeah, Simply SOP.
Yeah. There are skeptics out there, and this just came to mind now to ask you, because there are those who look at metrics, key performance indicators, or SOPs as a necessary evil that doesn't really play a role in scaling businesses. What would you say to those naysayers?
Or what perspective? I used to be one of those naysayers, actually. Yeah. And my business partner kind of talked me out of it. I mean, yeah, anything that can be done in person can be done remote. You can hire VAs for any business. Culture is an incredible part of it, that it's almost impossible to keep people around without. And these are all kind of beliefs that I fought back in the day. But now I'm a firm believer, after working with thousands of entrepreneurs, that all that is true.
In terms of selling your company, would you say that you were able to sell your companies, have them acquired, and continue to run as a result of having those SOPs?
More specifically. Definitely. So I've sold one company the process were a big part of it. If they went to us and they said, how does customer service work? How does billing work? And we said, oh, don't worry, it's in our head, or Jane in customer service, we taught her how to do it. Like, they're not buying that company. They need to see who does what when in every situation.
Great. Points that you made also made me think about a recent panel on culture, company culture, that I was a part of, where there was a lot of debate about does company culture eat strategy for breakfast? Do you need one versus the other? And I think you've shown that you need to have a strategy, process, platforms, but you need to merge it with the culture. So my next question is, what is your personal opinion on whether or not technology makes us intelligent, technology itself? And I ask you this question because of some benefits and concerns that were raised in Elon Musk's Neuralink company, which offers a lot of great benefit potentially to patients with Alzheimer's or Parkinson's disease. But essentially, it's a chip that's inserted right beneath the skull that has these fine wires that are placed inside the brain and that can make people more intelligent. Any personal commentary you have either on Elon Musk's new technology or just on what you feel the role of technology really is in our business and in ourselves as individuals?
Technology kind of is what you make of it. And I also think every entrepreneur is kind of in a different stage too. I mean, there's different, even like social media apps coming out like Clubhouse that could be a huge time waster, or it could be the best thing that your business has ever done, depending on how you look at it and where you are in your entrepreneurial journey. So I think technology is always going to be like that. And there's going to be people that abuse it and people that it helps and people that it hurts. So I don't know if that answers your question, but that's kind of how I look at it.
No, that was a great example of Clubhouse. And I think you and your story is, I think, a testament to how you can utilize technology in a way that can scale your business. And I know that many listeners are going to be inspired by your example. And I want to just give you this opportunity to share with us any message you have or how we can contact you. Please, any message you have for the All Out Coach listeners?
Yeah. So, I mean, first of all, you have to hire if you want to scale. And it's never been a better time to get access to people all over the world and different price points, different skill sets. And if anyone wants to learn more from me, go to outsourceschool.com. You can book an awesome call or a call with my awesome team and check out everything we offer there.
Great. Thank you very much for your time. It's been an honor, a privilege. Thank you, Nathan. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Have a good rest of the day.
Have a great day.